Hi, I'm Dawn Heath Fiedler. I am 58 years old. Today's date is February 8th, 2023. I'm located right now at the Lake Geneva Library, right on the lake. It's beautiful. And I am with my friend Heather, and I'm excited to be here.
Hi, I'm Heather Brewer. I'm 53 years old. Today's date is February 8th, 2023. We're at the Lake Geneva Public Library. And I am here to have a wonderful conversation with my friend Dawn. So Dawn, tell me about where you were born, where you come from.
I was born in England. We came here to the United States when I was six the first time. In between that, we lived in Germany for 3.5 years. My dad was in the Royal Air Force, and so we were stationed in Germany. We came to the United States in 1970 and then moved back to England in fifth grade for almost a year, not quite, and then came back to the United States again. And after that, I either went to England for the summers or my grandparents would come to us, so we kind of alternated between summers. And then when I was 25, I moved back to England and I met my husband, and my first child was born in England. When Mitchell was a year old, we moved back to the United States because I knew I needed to be near my mom and dad, who are here in Lake Geneva, because Lake Geneva is home.
Wonderful. What brought your family to the United States?
Well, we were in Germany. Dad had been in the Air Force for 9 years, and his time was up. And so we went back to England, and they just weren't satisfied staying in England. They had a wanderlust. When we lived in Germany, we traveled all over Europe. We camped everywhere. Every weekend, we were in a different country, and they missed that. So they applied to live in the United States. They applied for visas here. They applied for visas in Canada, and they applied for visas in Australia. Now, my mom's older sister had married an American Air Force man and lived here in Milwaukee. And so they thought it would be good to move to the United States. But the United States said no, and they turned down our visa. Canada said you can have one out of four. My brother had been born by then. And Australia said, yeah, come on over. We'll give you all four visas. Well, they decided at that time that Australia was just a little bit too far from family. So they sent my dad to Canada, and my mom stayed in England, and she worked from England to get us our visas. My dad worked from Canada to get our visas, and my aunt and uncle, who lived here in Milwaukee, they worked from here to get those visas, and it took about 6 months. In fact, Senator Proxmire is the one who finally got a hold of it and made sure that we got our visas so that we could move here. And we moved here. I just got my passport. May 21st, 1970 is when we moved to the United States and settled in the Milwaukee area.
I'm so glad your family went through all that rigmarole to get you here. Because you are an amazing person who has brought a passion of yours to benefit your community and much farther out as well. Tell me, how did you decide to join Rotary? What was the impetus for that?
I accepted a position with the Boys and Girls Club in Delavan to help with their fundraising. And they said, well, part of your job is to join Rotary. And I had no idea what Rotary was. So I went to that first meeting in Delavan, Darien, and I was stunned because I have spent my whole life working with nonprofits and doing service jobs. And I suddenly found a whole group of people who were like-minded. And I had no idea that this was out there, that there were people that liked to do things as well and help in our community. And so after, 30 years of doing this, suddenly I'm a Rotarian, and it was the most amazing thing. So my position with Boys and Girls Club ended. And because I accepted a full-time position, that was only a part-time position, I needed full. And so I went to the company who hired me and said, I will do this, but you have to pay for me to be in Rotary. And they're like, well, what's Rotary? It is this. Let me explain what Rotary is. It's people just like me who care about our community and want to make a difference and work every day to make that happen. And he said, okay. And so I joined Rotary in Elkhorn at that point. I moved to a different club. And I've been a part of it since. So I left that position after a couple of years because I accepted a position with a local church, organizing outreach opportunities for the members of that church, which was my dream job. I loved that position so much. But while I was there, I was asked if I would consider being the president of my club, the Elkhorn Club. And I said, okay, sure, why not? And so as part of my training, the club sent me to the Rotary District Conference in Milwaukee. It was at Pottawatomie Casino. And it was eye-opening. I learned so much about Rotary because of that. And that Saturday morning, there were bunches of workshops, and they were talking about all the different projects that Rotary is involved in around the world. And they were all full. All those classrooms were full. And I thought, well, I could stand in the back, and I have really bad knees, so that wasn't really an option. I could go to this one workshop that was on human trafficking. There was lots of empty spaces there. Or I could go back to my room and take a nap. So I attended the workshop on human trafficking, and it was run by an organization based out of Racine, and it changed my life. Boom, just like that. I sat there for 2 hours completely spellbound. I have family all over the world, and I knew that there was such a thing as human trafficking. I had no idea the impact it had in my own community. At that time, and this was in 2017, I was told at this workshop that Wisconsin was number 3 in the nation for human trafficking. Yeah. And that blew my mind. I couldn't sleep that night. I really felt God was calling me to do something, and I didn't really know what that looked like, because who am I? I'm just Dawn. And I came home from the conference and went back to work the next morning. I worked for a church, mm-hmm. so I had to be up early. Mm-hmm. So it should be against your religion to have to get up early on a Sunday morning.
I feel you, Dawn.
I know you do. But I get to the church, and I'm sitting in the fellowship hour in between services, and I'm talking about this because it was so impactful. And the people I'm talking to are like, well, what can we learn? How can we learn what these indicators are? What if we're in a doctor's office and we see something that doesn't look right? So I went to my boss, the pastor, and I said, people want to know. He goes, well, I think you need to organize an awareness event and educate people. Okay. So I went to my Rotary Club, and the incoming president, because I was what they'd call a president nominee at the time, so my term wasn't for another year. She's like, well, I've been trying to educate on human trafficking for the last 2 years, and nobody wants to listen, but good luck if you think you can do this. So I said, okay, challenge accepted. Let's do this. So I put a team together, and we organized an awareness event, and it was going to be in January, on January 11th, which is National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And I went all over the county talking to different organizations and different businesses and service clubs, talking about what human trafficking was. And everybody stuck their head in the sand and said, no, it doesn't happen here. It's not here. We're Walworth County. We're a small agricultural area. It's just not a problem here. We don't want to know. But we got... We put the awareness event together. We got this panel of experts for question and answering. I brought the organization that I originally learned about this to come and share what it looks like in southern Wisconsin. And we brought Teresa Flores in, who is a national speaker and a survivor. And she came and shared her story. And we had all of this in place. We were really excited. It's January 11th, and we had an ice storm. And all of the news agencies from Milwaukee who were planning to be there could not get down 43 because of this ice. The roads were slick ice. And do you know, we still had 200 people show up, even in the middle of an ice storm. We had the event at the Elkhorn Area High School in the auditorium, and 200 people still came out for it. And it was phenomenal. So the event ends, and I'm thinking, yes, I can breathe. I did what I said I was going to do. I was going to educate my community. And the same nurse coordinator for Lakeland Hospital came up to me afterwards, and she goes, that was really awesome. We need to do this in Burlington. Can we do this again? I'm like, I'm breathing. It's a lot of work to plan an event like that. And to do it in January, right after Christmas, you work for a church. Christmas is the busiest month of the year. So I was just like, okay. And that's how Join the Movement was born. We were in the basement at the hospital, and that's how it started. And I registered for our federal tax ID number, our incorporation, all of it. But now we're, you know, we're a nothing organization. We don't even have the money to apply for a 501c3. So we start just working and just bringing this awareness. And I started getting some speaker fees. People wanted to pay me to bring this education. And I was attending different workshops and conferences and really getting educated myself. So now I'm sharing this information and I'm working with the internet crimes investigators for the county. And I'm learning so much about what social media's role is in trafficking our youth and how to protect them locally from this new digital world that we're living in. So I'm starting to get speaker fees for sharing the information that I'm learning. And so I use that to pay for our 501c3 application. We applied for the application on August 28th, 2018, and we were granted our 501c3 on September 7th. It was crazy. I've never seen anything like that. Nobody had. Even the accountant who applied for it has never seen a response in a week. And it being granted, and we knew that this was definitely a God thing, that we were, you know, this was definitely a calling, and we were in the right direction. And it's just really grown from there. I attend as much, as many conferences and workshops as I can to just keep learning, because everything changes. You know, technology changes on a daily basis. And even legislation can't keep up with what's out there. How can our parents keep up with what their kids are into? So I have to just keep getting that education myself so that I can help these families protect their own youth, protect their neighbors, and protect their own local communities on what this can be. So that led to victims being known in our area. So we went from a community that didn't believe this could ever happen here to we're getting victims, and what do we do with that? How are we going to help them? Okay, so we're bringing we want to do the prevention. We want to protect them beforehand, but what about if it's too late? What do we do next? So we launched our care team because there wasn't anyone in the county educated on human trafficking anymore, especially in the aftercare and the advocacy. So a year ago, we got together with different organizations in the county, and we came together to form the CARE team. And the CARE team stands for Community Advocate Resource Evaluation Team. And we are training community members who feel that same passion to work with victims of violence to help them through the worst time in their lives. So we have 20 members right now in the community, fully trained as advocates for human trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual assault victims. And we provide our advocacy emergency services in Lakeland Hospital and Burlington Hospital on the weekends. In Burlington Hospital, we may get called in to help during the week if the agency that's in Racine County doesn't have an advocate on call. And we have a great relationship with them, making that, you know, so that we know that the victims are not falling through the cracks. And then we work with the agency here in Walworth County to come alongside them and help them if so that our victims do not fall through the cracks. Because these agencies are state and federally funded, so they have boxes that they have to stay within those boxes. Not all of our victims fit in those boxes. So we are completely privately funded, and we can catch those that fall through the cracks, so to speak.
You could use some more team members.
Oh, we desperately need more team members.
Yes.
Because now we did trainings, law enforcement training as well, mm-hmm. and we were asked to come in and do a training at the Walworth County Sheriff's Department. So we trained all the corrections officers for the jail and as many deputies who were able to attend the trainings. We did 8 3-hour workshops, and they asked, can you bring your care team into the jail? So that's what we do. We have they're totally different setups. So the mm-hmm. hospital is emergency care only, and then they get referred to a local agency for follow-up care. because we don't provide that. We are, like I said, we're totally privately funded, so we don't have the staff to do anything like that. And that's already here. You know, why reinvent the wheel when that service is already being offered? But in the jail, when the corrections officers or the social worker or the counselor recognize that there's been a serious issue, that this is indeed a victim of violence, they call me. And I come in and I meet with that person personally, and I screen them to find out exactly what we're looking at. I have a gal in my advocacy program who has well established in the jail system. She's been running a prayer meeting there for years. So she is my go-to person. She sees everyone in the jail. She is that first advocate that they have. And then we bring in one of the other advocates so that each victim in the jail has two advocates that work with them on a regular basis. And they have, these advocates have to commit to a minimum of 2 visits a week for each victim. So that means that victim gets 4 personal visits every week. Because what happens? What happens when someone is a victim of domestic violence or of human trafficking? Heather, what, you know the answer to that. They're immediately alienated from all support.
Yeah.
The only person that they believe cares about them is the person who is exploiting them and abusing them. So we provide that. We come in and we provide that support. And if my schedule allows, I'm going to say 80% of the time, I even attend their court hearings so that they know that there's somebody there on their side. Because a lot of the times the victim's abuser is in that courtroom glaring at them and terrifying them, and they don't know that there's anybody out there that cares.
You clearly care about every aspect of this. This has been your life. You've been immersed in it since 2016?
2017. Well, and you know, even before that, my father was the prison chaplain for Robert E. Ellsworth Correctional Center for 30-some years. So I used to volunteer and work in the prison with my dad and my mom when they needed me. I've even gone and spoken to the ladies at Ellsworth about social media and how to protect their kids. Because even though they're incarcerated, they care and they want to do whatever they can to protect their kids from following in whatever footsteps that may be.
When do you sleep?
Well, I do. Life has certainly been different in the last few years when I got married, because my husband is obviously my priority. And, even my board members, family always comes first. Mm-hmm. And so Peter, my husband, is my priority. But he is so supportive, and he comes with me most times when I speak or do a presentation, if he's allowed to. He will drive. When I was asked to come up to Brainerd, Minnesota last year for a music festival to be a keynote speaker, he was my driver, and that was an 8-hour drive. That was a long day. Actually, we kind of split it, but, you know, we spent the night and did it two ways.
You hear and see some horrifying things.
Yeah.
You know, what keeps driving you to do this? How do you fill yourself up enough to be able to pour yourself out so much for others in need?
Well, it's all about balance. There, some of these stories are devastating.
Yeah.
And it's just, if I'm able to do something to help someone make that next step, then that's what it's going to take. And it, you know, if it means I pour into whatever I'm able to do, it's every day we're given an opportunity to make a difference. You know, we have 24 hours in a day that we can try and make a difference in someone else's life. What does that look like? Every day is different. I don't know. And I just take it one day at a time, one step at a time. We've got a problem today. What can I do today to make a difference, to help that person? And when I go into the jail and meet with these, and it's not always ladies, there are men too. What do they need right now? I mean, they're safe. They're in the jail. They don't necessarily care to be there. But the one thing that they do know is that they are safe. And they also know that those corrections officers are in there, are there to protect them and to keep them safe. And for the most part, they know that. And they feel that peace of being in a safe place. But it's, you know, every day is different. I don't know. I just figured out. Some days it's just, you know, self-care. Sure. I'll go get my nails done. I'll go get my hair done. There's nothing like having your hair shampooed, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
By another person. So, and my husband is amazing. He'll give me a massage when he knows that I'm stressed. But he's usually right there by my side through this whole thing. And he is a source of the balance that I need. Obviously, my faith in God is a major part in that. My church that I'm involved in is a major part in that, too. My family, I have an amazing supportive family. Those are, you know, you find your peace where you can. My husband, he was in bed reading when I came home from a training last week. And he goes, you know, I haven't seen you read in a while. I'm like, well, there's not a lot of time for reading. I'd rather sleep. But, you know, you find the balance where you can. January was crazy busy with National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. But even the lead up to December was so busy because we were in the jail so much. You know,
holidays are some of the worst time for domestic violence.
Absolutely.
And trafficking. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you think December is usually a quiet month for human trafficking because people don't want to learn about human trafficking when they're preparing for Christmas. But that wasn't the case this last year. It was just nuts.
Now, you were just recently invited to Washington, D.C.
I was. That was a pretty awesome experience. So my husband came with me, and we actually went out a day early so that we could see some of the sites. The Safe House Project, based in Virginia, had organized a summit at the U.S. Capitol. And they had sent me an invitation to come. And my board was wholeheartedly in agreement. Yes, you need to go. So we went. And it was a pretty amazing experience. We were invited to a cocktail party at the Ritz-Carlton. Now, I am a small-town girl. I love small-town living. I don't even like traffic lights. I take all the back roads. I am not a big city person at all. And so it was quite the experience to be invited to the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C. for a cocktail party. That is so beyond my realm of life. Mm-hmm. But I met so many people who were so in tune and so the work that they're doing around the world. It was so inspiring to talk to them and to learn and it, you know, I mentioned that I was at this music festival. It was organized by Rotary up in near Brainerd, Minnesota. And one of the bands that they had, this whole music festival was dedicated to education on human trafficking. I was one of the speakers. There were many. And there was a band called Remedy Drive. And Remedy Drive was performing right after I spoke the first time. I was one of the first speakers on Friday. And I didn't get a chance to meet the band beforehand because I was speaking and they were setting up. So he came on, David, the lead singer, he's out. And he goes on trips around the world when he's not touring with Exodus Road, rescuing girls from human trafficking all around the world. And he's talking about it, and he kept saying, you know, what she said. And he kept referring to she, me. So afterwards, he had met Peter while I was speaking, and he tells Peter, I need to meet your wife, because I don't even remember her name, right? So he's referring to she throughout his whole performance. And afterwards, I went up to meet him, and I said, hi, I'm she. So when I was in Washington, D.C., I met one of the founders for Exodus Road, Matt, and we had a wonderful conversation, and we talked a little bit about Remedy Drive and David's work with Exodus Road, rescuing girls from around the world. And then there's a picture on Facebook of the two of them together when they're back in Nashville area. And I just said something on the Facebook post about it was wonderful to meet Matt in Washington, D.C. You remember me, David, I'm she. And he said, I will never forget that. So, it's just fun. And it's great, though, to be around people who are so like-minded, who care so deeply about those who are being exploited, but not just in our own area, but around the world. And I get people who say, I've got a problem. I have a friend in Africa who needs help. It's like, I don't know that realm, but now I know who to send them to.
Right.
And you know, we're working with a gentleman right now who is brought over here and has been exploited, who just wants to go home to his home in Africa. And so we're working to help make that happen.
Huge part of what you do is building connections and partnerships.
Yes.
Knowing who to refer to, who to talk to, and all of that. And that can be like juggling cats with chainsaws. So you have a definite gift to be able to do that. Some of your partners in the area, who do you work with here?
We work with New Day Women's Clinic. We work with Safe Families. We work with New Beginnings. We work with Belief in Racine County, Fight to End Exploitation in Racine. We, Aurora Healthcare, you know, we work with the SANE Nurse Coordinator. She's now, SANE is not the phrase used anymore. SANE stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. Mm-hmm. Now they're called Forensic Nurse Examiners because they are collecting the forensic evidence from you know, a rape kit or whatever the cert, you know, even domestic violence. And so we work very closely with the Aurora, Kathy Duco Cross, who happens to be the current SANE Nurse Coordinator for Aurora here at Lakeland and Burlington Hospitals. We work very closely with the jail. In fact, the superintendent of the jail is on my board. And so I'm in the jail all the time. In fact, I was in a courtroom and an attorney friend of mine sat next to me, and he looked at me, he goes, Dawn, are you here every day? I was like, well, if I'm not here, I'm probably next door in the jail. He goes, you know, you really need to stop getting into trouble.
No, this is good trouble. You stay doing good trouble.
Yeah, so it's like I say, every day is different. Nothing is ever the same. And it could be a grandmother calling about her 3-year-old who she's concerned about. We work very closely with Agape House, and they have me on speed dial. New Day has me on speed dial. The jail has me on speed dial. It's just, you know, it is whatever the situation comes up every day, something different.
A lot of people have you on speed dial.
Yeah.
That's a lot, and you carry it with such grace and such passion. What are you hoping for the future of Join the Movement to be?
The future, oh boy, I'm so glad you asked that because that really became clear when I was in Washington, D.C. We do not have a program here in Walworth County. We do not have an aftercare program for our victims, and we don't even have a place for them to stay. So I have 6 women in the jail that we're working with right now who are worried what's going to happen to them when they're released. Where do they go? They go back to their trafficker or their abuser? We have nowhere for them to go. And the problem with the jail is we don't even know if they're going to be allowed to leave the county, let alone the state, to go into a program. That's all. That everything's up in the air for them. If they come through the hospital system, at least we're able to work to get them into a program. We don't have the legal aspect of whether or not they're allowed to leave or not. So we desperately need a place here in Walworth County. And that, I have my board meeting next week, and I'm bringing this to the board saying, we need to work on this. We need to provide an aftercare program, and we need to provide a safe place for them to go. So the organizations that I worked with or spoke with when I was in Washington, D.C., they have all of these things in place. And they're like, you got it. You want an aftercare program? Here's ours. It's yours. You need a house? We don't have a house in Wisconsin. Let's do it. And we can even help provide the funding for that. So I just have to talk to my board about it. So I hope they're not listening to this yet.
It'll be a surprise.
Yes.
A really amazing surprise, you know, to be planning ahead for an expansion of what you do to encompass all of the needs
right.
of the people who are most affected by this.
Well, when I first started in 2017, mm-hmm. people stuck their head in the sands. This didn't happen here. Even a law enforcement officer said, well, I think we've had one case in the county. So we launched the care team last April 1st, and we had our first case with the hospital on April 24th. And since that time, I counted yesterday, we've worked with 30 victims.
Wow.
Of all ages.
Wow.
So we have 20 advocates trained now. 3 of them are men.
Very important.
Very important.
Very important.
Yes.
Men are affected and trafficked too, and absolutely. Are victims of domestic violence and assault.
Absolutely.
And it's so much harder for men to seek help.
Mm-hmm.
The stigma is huge around that. So having,
it is.
So you could use some more men probably on your team as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have two pastors and mm-hmm. a lawyer. And they are phenomenal. They are so good. So we provide the training. We do 6 hours of training. And we separate it into two nights. It's 3 hours each night for the care team workshop training course. And they come away with a certificate that they have graduated and now they are working as an advocate. But it doesn't stop there. Just because they're on the schedule to be on call at the hospital doesn't mean they're going to get called. So now their skills are not being utilized. So we do additional training every month that's free. So the initial workshop training, we charge $40 because we have to do background checks and we have to provide the materials. So it's a $40 fee and that's it.
There's no profit being made there.
Nothing. We are a nonprofit.
Yeah,
we
absolutely.
Don't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry. So mm-hmm. we do the 6 hours of training, and we volunteer our time to do mm-hmm. this. And then we do additional training every month. And they come in for this training. We also do it via Zoom or in person. They have those options. And we work through a role-playing incident of a situation that's actually happened. And we allow them, one of the advocates will be a victim, and one will be the advocate. We have usually the forensic nurse examiner, Kathy, is there, and she plays the part of the nurse, obviously. And Heidi Lloyd, who is our care team coordinator, she runs the trainings. She is there to moderate and to help guide. But it's an opportunity for the advocates to work through any case and stop and ask a question. What about this? How about this? And usually the trainings are supposed to be for 1 hour. It's never lasted just an hour. They don't like to leave. I don't know if it's the cookies and the chocolate that I bring or the fact that they're just enjoying the conversation and the learning aspect. And it just helps them understand each different case scenario. So we'll work through a sexual assault. We'll work through human trafficking. We will work through domestic violence. We will work through a child situation. We will work through the jail. We have done all different things. And then we've even done a case study of a situation that came through the hospital. We do. And it's just, they love it. They love these trainings so much. It's really great to see their enthusiasm for what they're learning, for what they're doing.
Well, passion calls to passion. Absolutely. Considering that there was like significant pushback when we tried to address the need of a domestic violence shelter in Elkhorn, do you feel like the groundwork has been laid sufficiently for what you hope to do for the future to perhaps kind of mitigate some of that pushback?
I don't know. Seriously, that's just something that needs to be prayed about at this point, when the timing has to be right. I'm hopeful. You know, people think of human trafficking victims going into a home. We don't want that kind of criminal activity in our neighborhoods, and that's not what it is at all. I'm working, I have a victim that, it was one of the first victims in the jail when we started providing advocacy in the jail. She is in a program in Illinois, and it's a wonderful program. It's out of a Methodist church in the area, and they have a home in a neighborhood, and these victims, survivors, they're not even victims, they're survivors, live together in this home. There isn't even a staff member in the home with them. They are cooking for themselves and taking care and learning how to take care of themselves. They come in and they have jobs working for Thistle Farms, making candles to mm-hmm. sell. And my angel, I call her my angel. She is thriving. She's doing so well. She graduated to the next level in 3 months. So now she's working and she's making more in her life than she's ever made in her life.
Yeah.
And she was, her story is horrific. And in fact, we are having a fundraiser next month at the Riviera here in Lake Geneva, and she's coming to share her story. So the FBI agent that helped to keep her safe, I want to say the word rescue because mm-hmm. truly she was, that FBI agent has told me that this is one of the worst cases she has ever worked with. And she works nationwide.
Yeah.
And she's coming and she's going to share her story. She's doing so well. I'm so stinking proud of her. Like I say, I call her my angel. She's such a love.
Just seeing the difference that you make for individuals who have nobody or nothing on their side, and seeing the difference you've made in the community to educate them and to make them aware so that they too can be partners in this,
right?
To know what to look for and such like that. What else can the community do to support what y'all are doing?
We need to, you know, the greatest asset we could have in ending human trafficking in our own community is to educate our youth. We need to educate our young people, because our young people, they're going to see the indicators long before we do as the adults, the teachers, the parents, because they see their friends for 8 hours a day, all day long. They'll see the indicators. Why does she have two cell phones? Why is her clothing changing? Why is she dressing differently? Why is she on the phone after every class with her boyfriend? And why is he sitting outside the school waiting for her?
Yeah.
You know, she's pulling away from my friends, mm-hmm. our friends. Why is that? Her grades are slipping. Their friends will see these things long before we would as adults. They might even see a tattoo that suddenly appears in a very, you know, intimate place in the locker room after mm-hmm. gym class or something.
The more they know, the better they can help each other.
Absolutely. The key is to educate our youth,
yeah.
and they will really make the difference. I have been in conversation with one of our local school districts to bring our care team into the high schools and train. I do have one of my advocates is a student at a local high school. She's graduating this year. She works in the health industry already.
Outstanding.
So I want to bring this program into the schools. I think it would make such a difference, because the kids will talk to their peers before they will talk to an adult. And if we can educate them on what to say, who to talk to, what to do, that's the key.
In the past, I know there's been some resistance.
Oh, yes.
From the schools. Hopefully.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we move forward with all the work that you've been doing to help kind of tear some of those walls down for the betterment, for the good of our youth.
You'd think that would be the case.
You'd
because,
think.
Yeah. Because the statistics will tell you, and, you know, I hate math. I hate statistics because they change all the time. Well, math doesn't, but statistics do. Every high school, every middle school in the United States, the numbers are telling us that there's at least one student in every one of those schools who's being groomed or trafficked right now.
Yeah. And education has to start much earlier than health class in high school.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Because the kids are on social media so much earlier now, especially after the pandemic. The pandemic made that explode. And I have been so busy bringing this education, especially through the month of January.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've got to bring this education into all of our communities. The more we know, because you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right. But if you don't know, now you know.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much, Dawn, for sharing all of that with us, for your journey and for the work that you do. And we'll keep praying for your success and working with you however we can. Because you're doing amazing, amazing work. Thank you so much.
Oh, Heather, you are such a love. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me today, too.